Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we are now on episode 3 of season 10. Bow, bow, bow.
Things are happening.
I wouldn't say looking up, but they are definitely happening.
In the words of Bravo, watch what happens. We are not watching what happens live. We're watching what happens maybe like 15 years in the future. But
yeah, we're just watching it.
We're watching.
One day we will be out. If anyone listening can get us on Watch What Happens Live, either as audience members or bartenders, please reach out to us.
Or just please. General, like someone like just dusting something in the background. I'm open to it.
We'd be open to it. Anyway, okay. So before we get into episode 3, we have some leftovers to discuss. Honestly, leftovers, I believe, is my favorite segment because it's so well named. Firstly, and it's so silly.
We're so great. And it's nice because we can be, it's like the most hard-hitting part of the whole episode because it's factual.
It's basically fact.
Where the rest is just hot air.
It's just us.
Okay, Nancy, we had a question on the stew room, which I think you dug into.
I did dig into the stew room. So the stew room is where they hang out while the judges are doing their deliberations. It's where the cast hangs out. And Bits and I had a bit of a back and forth realizing that neither of us knows why it's called the stew room. I looked it up. It turns out I thought a stew room was like a thing that exists in the world. As it turns out, the stew room is something that only exists on Top Chef. It's not like a concept in the world. But here is what I learned about the stew room. So I looked it up on Google and Gemini generated this response for me. So we don't know if it's factual because historically Google Gemini/Bard has not been very good, but I think that this works. Okay. On Top Chef, the stew room refers to a small area in the kitchen where the contestants typically gather between serving dishes to the judges and hearing the results of the challenge. Essentially, it is a place to stew while waiting to learn their fate, hence the name. It is a space for them to anxiously anticipate the outcome of their cooking efforts. Key points about the stew room. Function. It is a holding area where chefs can decompress, strategize, and sometimes even discuss their dishes while awaiting feedback. Emotional context. Stewing implies a sense of nervous anticipation and sometimes even frustration, reflecting the high-pressure environment of a cooking competition. This is my favorite headline. Not a literal stew-making area. While the name might suggest a place where stew is cooked, it is simply a metaphorical term describing the waiting area within a kitchen.
Okay, love that. Because the stew room actually was a thing, was a designated room in very old homes where they would make stews and like slow cooked foods.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Did you do extra stew room research?
Well, that was where my stew room research took me first before I kind of like appended Top Chef. So like a stew room is in fact like an offshoot of a kitchen in a very old, like old,
so
old.
So it is something that exists in the world. A stew room is a real thing. Okay. See, I was confused when I couldn't find results that weren't Top Chef related.
I don't know if they're going for the double entendre here or not. Because they're in a storage room, not a stew room. Like a stew room like has a special stew stove.
A stew stove.
Hey, this is my friend Stew Stove. So anyways, thank you for that. That's very wow. We learned something today. Let's check in on our counter. So last week, you'll remember, I'm sure you didn't forget. We landed on a few things for our counter. Mm. So hit us with a refresher, Nancy.
Yes. So we like to make counters for all the things that we see thematically coming up a lot in the season. And so here is a summary. We are on episode 3, and we are tracking bacon, spot prawns, cauliflower, mushrooms, and then food prepared n number of ways, which is frequent. So as of episode 3, we have seen 2 uses of bacon, 3 uses of spot prawns, 2 uses of cauliflower, and 6 uses of mushrooms. That's a lot of mushrooms.
A lot of mushrooms.
And we've seen 1 use of food prepared n ways.
Okay. Okay. So we're kind of crawling out of the gate. But I like these numbers. It's only
episode 3. Not with mushrooms. We're fucking blooming like fungi out of the gate. We're going. Mushrooms.
We're going.
Good stuff.
Wow. All right. Let's get into this ep. I think we're done.
Yeah, let's begin.
All right, Nancy, Amuse-Bouche Reactions Episode 3.
I love Thanksgiving. So I was really happy to see this.
Mm-hmm.
My amuse-bouche to that, it is like, it is clear that it is not Thanksgiving when this episode was filmed. And so it's funny to see them, like, Padma's like, it's Thanksgiving. And the chefs are like, I guess it is.
It's like those old episodes of America's Next Top Model where they had to like do like the swimsuit like shoots, but it was like winter and that was the whole point. Like when you're a model, like you can't decide like
you have to shoot cold.
You have to shoot spring in the winter and whatever.
Yes. But I'm sure that I will hold space and leave space for you and your amuse-bouche to talk about the format of this episode because once again, totally new and throwing a wrench in things.
Yep. But this is what I was talking about last week. So to just go right into it, I love this challenge. I love this elimination challenge. Mm-hmm. I'll save the meat of my – I'll save the turkey for later in that. But –
will it be cooked properly?
Oh, probably be overcooked.
I made one turkey in my life and it was a bit overcooked.
I'm going to dry this turkey out by the end of this episode. Okay, but no, I love this format for the exact thing that I was mentioning when we spoke last week, which is it's sort of a team challenge, but everybody's responsible for their own dish. Mm-hmm. Loved that. I also love how much Tom and Emeril have been sort of in the weeds, in the trenches this season in a really fun way. Like, not in a way that's going to, like, sway anything, but I thought it was such a fun energy having this extra layer of sort of, like, camaraderie slash rivalry. I loved it. I love this episode.
So I'm of two minds about Emeril and Tom being involved in the cooking. As a viewer, I loved it. Like, I love seeing – like, we know – Emeril is a TV personality. So mm-hmm. we know that he – his personality is, like, a fun, loving, understanding, like, welcome to my home kind of guy. And so, like, that is always going to be fun. It wouldn't – he wouldn't have the career that he has if he didn't know how to light up in front of a camera. Tom, on the other hand, famously does not light up in front of the camera. He's not a curmudgeon, but he is very reserved with his emotions because he's a judge. And like he is the ultimate decider in these people's fate. But we also know just from watching him and we went to his book event, like he's an incredibly thoughtful and kind and good person.
Yeah.
He just, you know, has to be quite serious on the show. So it was a joy to see him loosen up and cook.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is from the viewer's perspective. If I'm going like hardo Top Chef competition perspective, I do not like that they were involved in the challenge. Because it felt like I understand, or let me, it is a Thanksgiving challenge to then bring in Tom and Emeril, who have like culinary cultures that are really different from the traditional Thanksgiving meal. And I understand that it influences a Thanksgiving meal, but like they imposed so much on what was created.
That's fair.
To the point where I'm like, is this fair to the contestants? Like someone's making pasta who's never done it before and like has to do it because Tom was like, we make pasta at Thanksgiving.
I don't even know that that was the part that was unfair so much as like I don't know if it was like you've never done this thing and now you have to do it. It more so was you have to do this one thing.
Yeah, conceptually. Yeah. I just thought it like
I agree with
it
that.
Stripped them of so much agency.
Yeah.
That I was like, what is the purpose of their being there?
Yeah. And you saw it – let's put a pin in it because I'm going to start talking about chefs. But like I think that's a completely valid read of this episode.
Sorry, we got ahead of ourselves because there's a whole quick fire.
There's a whole quick fire, and this quick fire was fire. I think in the opposite way, I thought
I loved this quick fire.
Yes, the quick fire this week was there. The chefs walk into the kitchen, they see a world map, and there are 17 knives placed all over that map.
Yep.
To signify 17 different local dumplings that they have the option of selecting. So the chefs have to prepare 17 different dumplings. That's one per chef. Or excuse me, you know, each chef gets one. Mm-hmm. And they have an hour to make it.
Can I just say, I would have been in hog heaven if I had been a judge.
Judging that one. I just love this challenge conceptually.
Dumplings! And I love this challenge. But like, dumplings are... There is a reason why every culture has its dumplings. It's because dumplings fucking rock.
Yeah.
And I was just so fun to see it. And like, it has nothing to do with Seattle. It was just like, here are all these different types of dumplings.
Yeah.
Loved it. And you know I love a knife draw.
Yes.
There was some weird product placement. We don't even need to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. The Kindle. They had 5 minutes on their Amazon Kindle Fires. I wonder if those are even a thing anymore, if Apple has just like eviscerated that.
I have a Kindle.
I have a Kindle, but an Amazon Kindle Fire. They were like iPads.
Oh, okay. Thank you for saying that, because I was so confused. I was like, you can't do research on a Kindle. Yeah. Like, you can just download
excuse
books.
Me. My Paperwhite cannot tell me what a potet ball is.
Wait. I'm actually really happy that you clarified that, because I was so confused.
Yeah, you were just going to breeze right over. Like, we don't need to talk about that sponsor. Don't worry. I get it, though. But we don't have to talk about it.
Yeah, I totally understood it. The reason why I don't want to talk about it is because everyone gets it.
So yeah, so I remember them. I remember this technology, but I have not seen it since. And I imagine because like,
wait, we got a leftover. What happened to the Amazon Kindle Fire?
Okay, that's a great one.
That's important. I'm gonna take note. But okay, so in addition to being in hog heaven for this challenge, there is one bone I have to pick. Which is, and I believe, I fear that I am taking on a cultural battle that is absolutely not mine to fight. But Micah gets Kazakhstan as his dumpling.
You mean Kazakhstan?
Kazakhstan? Well, I thought that was a made up place in Borat. Incredible pop culture reference of this moment that people only knew the country of Kazakhstan because of a comedic portrayal of a fictional character named Borat.
Alex loves to talk about how – well, he doesn't love to talk about it, but anytime Kazakhstan or Borat comes up, he will remind me that he went to high school with the son or daughter of the ambassador of Kazakhstan.
Okay.
So he actually knew about it.
He actually knew what it was before.
Crazy enough, he actually knew it was a place.
Pop culture. That was just like funny when people were like, Borat? What? I was like, oh my God, I forgot the cultural phenomenon that was Borat.
Yeah.
Wow, you're my wife to Alex. That's
my
funny.
Wife. My wife. I just listened to an interview, Sacha Baron Cohen, recently. He's like way too smart for people to interview. He was on Smart List and they were like so dumb by comparison.
Sacha Baron Cohen is a genius.
Yes. Yeah. Actually. In all of the
Ollie G show, incredible. I actually have a very fond memory of you and me. We were very, as I believe the kids call it, hungover in New Orleans, and we spent the whole day watching the Ollie G show.
The Ollie G show is some of the best, the funniest content on the internet.
My favorite. Okay, we could just keep going on the Ollie G show. My favorite Ollie G moment is when he's like on set and it says like politics in huge letters behind him, and he said politics. It's a word that makes most kids run away. I wish I had known that before I paid a ton of money to get these letters printed.
It's so dumb. It's so
good. Dumb. I love it. Anyway.
Okay. You were making a point way back.
Sorry. I am about to fight a battle that is absolutely not mine to fight. So I need to apologize for everyone I offend in doing so. But the dumpling for Kazakhstan was a manta. M-A-N-T-I. Which the I is actually that like – abutted Turkish I that doesn't have a dot, that's pronounced not I, or A, whatever. I believe that manta is a Turkish food and not from Kazakhstan. Like, I am certain that they have manta in Kazakhstan, but I don't understand why they didn't just put this knife in Turkey and not Kazakhstan. Because it is, and then I looked it up, and on the Wikipedia, manta is a type of dumpling mainly found in Turkish cuisine. So, like,
I think they were definitely going for like the shock factor of like, what am I going to do with this from this place? But yeah, that's a good find. That was a good spot.
It just, I don't know, felt a little weird to me as somebody who loves Turkish cuisine.
Before we dive into kind of who got what, we had a guest judge this episode. We had Dana Cowan, editor-in-chief in Food & Wine Mag, presumably the lovely Gail Simmons' boss. This woman gives major final boss of the Homeowners Association energy. She seems really scary. She's actually like super scary to me in a way that is like a quiet, insidious kind of
like the purge. Scary. Scary?
Yeah, maybe. She just seems like if you cross her, like there's like a sinister, like, I don't know. She gives off like a scary energy to me.
Okay.
Like if like I could see her very easily like slipping into like manic laughter.
Okay. As I slip into manic laughter.
You know, like laughing about Brooke's Dumpling with no dumpling.
You're probably right, because like to be the editor of a major publication takes some serious like strategizing and cutthroat energy.
Yeah.
Media is not a kind industry.
Yeah.
And being in media for like food is even more intense. Cutthroat because they got knives. So I bet you're right that like she definitely has another side to her that's maybe not like mean, but is definitely like savvy.
Yeah, yeah.
And political.
100%. Thank you for hearing me out on that.
If anyone is wondering, you should definitely go back and listen to episode 2 if you haven't, where we do a huge takedown of Anna Wintour, CEO of Condé Nast. Do we just hate media figures?
We destroyed her.
Took her to task.
Anyways, let's get into some of these dumps.
Yes.
I'm going to start at the top. Let's start with Bart, the tallest man in the room. Actually, I think CJ might be the tallest man in the room. I'm not sure. Bart is tall man. He makes a potet ball, which is Norwegian, with lamb and ragu with fried stuff. I kind of missed what that stuff was.
It looks delicious.
Let's run down, and if we've got something interesting to say, shout it out.
Yep.
Brooke Williamson. Okay, let's pause here. Actually, already, Brooke did. Help me with the pronunciation. A siomay from Indonesia.
I literally just wrote Indonesia in my notes.
Okay. So she had an Indonesian dumpling, but the kicker was that there was no flour left. So she actually made – this was a chicken and shrimp with peanut sauce. She had a little bit of a jicama, but she had no dough – excuse me, no flour to make a wrapper.
This was weird.
How? What? Yeah.
Like, I feel like the challenge is about making a dumpling, so they need to set up the chefs for success to make dumplings.
Yeah, that seems like a miss to me.
It feels like a miss from the production team.
Yeah, 100%.
That there wasn't enough flour for everyone. And also, there was no way there wasn't enough. Who was hogging the flour in that kitchen?
Yeah. Do you know how much like flour doesn't come in a small serving size.
Exactly. Like someone has a
comes
bag
in a literal
flour.
Sack. So yeah, that was like confusing in an annoying way, like an itchy way that like an itch I can't scratch.
It was,
so,
but she did a real, like, I bet if she had a wrapper, she would have won the challenge, which is so annoying because they really liked her dish.
Yeah.
So, oh well, on that front. Oh, okay. So we're just gonna call it ones that we like instead of running down.
I'm running down.
Okay,
right. I just happen to be in alphabetical order over here.
Oh, you go.
Let me take Carla. Okay. Carla had Africa, which really made me laugh. She had fufu from Africa. If I could just listen to Carla say fufu, I am fufu, I don't know, like just shouting. And then she actually was somebody that needed that Amazon Kindle Fire to like do research and just couldn't navigate it. She also had her hand all chopped up, so like her hand's not working really well. She was in a bad place with this challenge.
She had no idea what she was doing. And
I think she just made a meatball with like a wrapper. Like,
at a certain point, she just did not even attempt to fulfill the challenge. She just was like, fuck it, I'm doing Italy.
And what's her name? Dana Gowen was like, so we may need to set aside authenticity for this one. And she's like, yeah. It's like, well, that needs to be the title of Ep, I think. Oh, well, it was Thanksgiving, so I guess we have to do that. But like, need to set aside authenticity.
Literally, the quote is so good. Also that it's, quote, from Africa. I literally have in my notes.
Oh my God.
The question of authenticity we have to put aside.
Why? What is the deal with just fucking pick a country in Africa?
Yeah. Like, also, because fufu is not popular in every African country.
No, it is, because Top Chef said Africa.
Top Chef said Africa, the continent.
Like, what? I don't know. That's
this
so
is like
bonkers
when we would
to
see,
me.
Like, Asian food in season.
Yeah,
six.
Or like, what was that Hallmark or Netflix movie, like Romance or Christmas in Africa?
Oh, it's with Rob Lowe Charlotte from Sex and the City.
Yeah.
So that was silly. Not a good movie.
Do you think those people have actually been to Africa before? Probably not.
No, apparently Charlotte from Sex and the City is like really invested in that elephant sanctuary.
Oh,
and
oh,
she frequently
so
frequently goes.
Oh, okay.
I think that was a passion project for her.
So she was just like, look, I'm already going to be there. Just film this movie.
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty cool. All right, fine. Save the elephant. Interestingly, there were some chefs that we didn't see any dumplings from, like, I guess cut for time or something. So we didn't see anything from Chrissy. Mm-hmm. CJ had a pierogi. We've all heard of those. Polish. He did like a gooseberry and veal pierogi.
Cool.
Are you going boiled or fried on your pierogi? I guess that goes for.
It depends on what the filling is, honestly.
Yeah.
But I think in general, I like them boiled.
I like them boiled if they're cheese filling for sure, like cheese potato.
I actually think I like them fried if they're cheese.
Oh, interesting.
Because then it's essentially a mozzarella stick.
Well, see, I just like that it's just like so one note texture wise. I love that.
You like weird textures like that.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay, so moving on. We didn't see anything from Danielle. We didn't see anything from Eliza. John, Kropkaka.
From
Sweden. That was a potato dumpling with bacon and bechamel, I think. Josie had a mandu from Korea. She had pork, tofu, shiitake, scallions. So that's one of our mushrooms we've counted. Mm-hmm. She got a little bit of a question on like, is kimchi part of it? And Josie was like,
if we have Carla making literal Italian ravioli, Josie, putting kimchi on a Korean dish does not feel like something we should be incredulous about.
Yeah, you know what? Like, if you maybe ate that before.
Yeah. Kimchi is literally fundamental to Korean cuisine. I would not be like, supposed to be kimchi in this? Like, probably, yeah. I have never eaten a bite of Korean food and been surprised that kimchi was there.
Yeah, like, what's this doing here? What are you doing here? We didn't see anything from Josh. Kristen had momo. From Nepal, pork and chicken liver with ginger and cumin. That sounds delish. Mm-hmm. Kuniko luckily got Japan. She had takoyaki. I love that she was like, yeah, I don't make this. I go to like places that specialize in making it, but like I've had it.
But then she didn't get it on the plate.
I hate when that happens.
That sucked.
Especially when it's somebody I like. When it's somebody I don't like, I'm like, yes.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, shows that you're bad at time management.
Yeah, yeah. But for Kumiko, it's like, no, she's just so dedicated to the food. Like,
let her do it.
Let her cook. Let her serve. okay, Lizzie had, this was a Hungarian.
Plum gombok.
Yeah. Plum and cinnamon filled potato pastry. I love that sounds great to me. I love a sweet, savory.
Yeah, that sounded
stitch.
Nice. That sounded nice. I think of all of these, I would have wanted Sheldon's dumpling.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
I am nothing if not a traditionalist when it comes to dumplings. Give me a little Chinese dim sum any day, and I am happy as a clam.
Yeah, and he knew it, so he was like, he was vibing. Mm-hmm. Micah actually did really well with the manta, even though he was like a little incredulous at
first.
Manta's
a delicious dumpling. It's essentially just like lamb and yogurt.
Yeah.
Which is
lamb and yogurt, little date in there.
Can't go wrong.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Let's see, rounding this out quick, we've got Stefan who does klops. That's German, so he's chilling. We didn't see anything from Tyler. So our tops were Josie, Micah, and Stefan.
Yep.
Who did you think was gonna take it? Did you have any like
thought Sheldon was gonna take it? I was surprised that he wasn't in there.
Yeah, yeah. I guess maybe they were like, we need to highlight some other lesser known
dumplings.
Who knows?
I agree. Josie takes it with her mandu. And why do I have this note that says complete in a short amount of time? Oh, the comment about her dish was that it was such a complete dish given how little time that they had.
Yeah, yeah.
I need to start taking better notes. And as a result, she won, which is great. Unfortunately, on the bottom, we have Brooke because of her no wrapper, Carla's fufu, which, you know, we had to put authenticity aside, aka the challenge. The challenge was literally to be authentic, and Carla was like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
And then we have, unfortunately, Kuniko, who did not get anything on the plate. I think that
sucks.
to me, the biggest sin here is actually Carla. Like, Brooke gave it everything she had.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, there was no flower that feels like a production error. Kuniko, I obviously understand, based on the rules, did the worst, like...
Can you imagine, though, like, Kuniko also, in the first episode, admits, like, she doesn't really speak English that well. And so you add that, plus, like, okay, this clock is kind of... If I went on, like, a Japanese cooking show and, and they were, like, just shouting, and I was like, oh, my God, like, there's no way my food's getting on the plate. Like, I'm actually shocked she, like, literally won every challenge last episode because she's an incredible cook. But then I just have to think that, like, there's so many extraneous things working against her that would be so tiring if we were plopped in the middle of Japan or Kazakhstan.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good point. Anyway, okay. So that's the roundup of the quickfire. Thank you for sticking with us as we had our little moments. Let's get to the elimination challenge, which we already gave a little peek behind the curtains. The elimination challenge, it's Thanksgiving. It is clearly not Thanksgiving in Seattle. It's clearly the
summer. They don't even celebrate in Seattle, Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, they don't enjoy anything out there. They're just like, this land is stolen and therefore we do not celebrate Thanksgiving. The land is stolen. I agree with that. I also love Thanksgiving. We'll get to that at Judgy Table. But anyway, so the challenge is create a Thanksgiving feast. We are split into two teams. And do they do a knife draw for the two teams? I believe they did.
No.
They didn't? Oh, they just like – oh, Padma was like –
like the parting of the seas.
Go there and you go there.
Because I distinctly remember Carla like first tried to like sneak over to the Tom team and then they were like, no, no, no. Like da-da-da-da-da. And then in the next shot she was in the Emerald team. So
that's a really good point. Anyway, so the teams are being led by either Tom Colicchio or Emeril Lagasse. And – Tom Colicchio and Emeril essentially get to dictate the style and dishes of the menu.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think your amuse-bouche kind of hit the nail on the head. Like, it was sort of like, here's my menu for Thanksgiving. Now figure out who does what.
It was super weird. And the other thing is that, like, these cuisines that they've chosen are quite technical. Like, gumbo is something that takes people – years of their life to perfect. And I understand that there's a real like fetishism around some of these dishes and like you can make a good gumbo even if you've never done it before, yada, yada, yada. But like Thanksgiving is a meal that is so deeply emotional and familiar and like, you know.
But yeah, and you can't make it like I can make a good gumbo like if I have a recipe in front of me, but it's got to be kind of challenging to just do total like I don't know. Nothing.
The issue, like Top Chef, of course, they're always put in uncomfortable situations where they have to make something that's like not in their wheelhouse. I get that. And I'm not trying to like say that it shouldn't be so difficult. I think the thing that I'm just hung up on is like it was imposed on them.
Yeah.
In a way that feels out of the ordinary for Top Chef. Like Top Chef, it's like the dumplings, like Manta. You've never heard of Kazakhstan and like Manta, but he figured it out.
Yeah.
But this was like, here's the head. Something that I want to talk about here is like the power dynamic. Tom Colicchio is the head judge of this show.
Yeah.
And he's telling you to do something. And you see this with Carla, who's like, he told me I had to do meatballs and I'm not going to say no to Tom Colicchio.
Right.
And it's, to me, it's just a really challenging power dynamic. And I don't think it played out in any like nefarious way, but it just added a weird element to this challenge that like I just couldn't quite get past the whole time.
So
the one thing I'll say is that they did save it when both Emeril and Tom recused themselves.
They could have like said that at the top of the episode, I think.
They shouldn't have waited.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I think I actually didn't even think about it, but so taking a step back, I have two questions for you that I want to chat through. Which team would you have wanted to compete on? And let's start there. Okay. Which of these two teams? We had a New Orleanian Creole Thanksgiving on Emeril Lagasse's team. That team was Brooke, Sheldon, Daniela, Tyler, John, Josie, Chrissy, Kumiko, Kristen. Josie had immunity from winning the quickfire. And then on the red team, we had an Italian American Thanksgiving. That was Carla, Bart, CJ, Eliza, Lizzie, Micah, Stefan, and Josh. So taking into account maybe the people. I don't even know, like, if you want to take into account the people, but at least, like, from a menu perspective.
I think I'd want to be on Emerald's team. Because I love the people on that team. I think I'm just obsessed with Sheldon. So I think I'd want to, like, work with Sheldon. And I just liked the energy on that team. And also because I love Emeril. And I think that I'd be less scared to cook with Emeril than Tom.
Yeah. I agree with all of your – I agree with all of your points. Part of me wonders if I wouldn't go Tom because I'm more familiar. Even after living in New Orleans for 8 years, like, I still think I'd be more familiar cooking
Italian. Yes, I am really intimidated by Cajun Creole cooking.
I will say that regardless, I would prefer to sit at Tom's Thanksgiving table.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will get to this when we talk to the food, but I have in my notes that for Emerald's team, like, my overall note was, this is a beige plate of food.
Yeah. Let's get in there. So we see them kind of like planning out.
What did you think about Tom when they were collecting all the ingredients in the Top Chef kitchen?
Take all the herbs.
To Micah, and he's like, are these all the herbs here? And you think that he's asking it because he wants more? And Micah's like, yeah. And he's like, take them all.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I'm like, I love that he got to, like, be a little bit of a competitor in that moment.
Yes, but also, like, he clearly has his own mind of, like, how he would compete in every single challenge. And he's like, why would anyone ever hog to the herbs?
So let's start let's start with Tom's team. Is that cool?
Yeah.
Because one thing, you know, we talked a lot about it feels very prescriptive and the menu was sort of, like, set by these two. And then there's a few people where their items just sort of, like, came out of nowhere. Like, mashed potatoes. Yeah. Lizzie made mashed potatoes. And I kind of gathered from the conversation at the dinner table that it was Lizzie's suggestion. It was like, you know, like, Tom either said something or, like, I'm led to believe that it was her suggestion to do and she knows how to do it. So it almost felt like there was some, like, pockets of the menu that were pushed by the contestant. But was there anything else on this menu that maybe jumped out to you as, like –
That's a good point. I didn't really – take that into consideration. The one thing that really jumped out to me as, like, out of nowhere and, like, why does it exist was Eliza's dessert, the chocolate tart with white chocolate and mint syrup. Like,
yeah.
First off, it just looked like a brick of chocolate. Like, it didn't look good at all. And I feel like if you're doing an Italian-themed dinner, there are, like, 100 desserts I would think of before that.
Yeah. I mean, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So that one just was an incredible curveball to me. And I don't think it was very good, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a crazy flavor profile too.
But in general, so on that team, we have Carla making carrot soup with turkey meatballs. I mean, that sounded so good.
Yeah,
like, so good. Carrot soup with turkey meatballs sounds divine. Oh my God, so delicious, especially for Thanksgiving. Yum. Then we have Bart making a fennel, gorgonzola, orange, and pumpkin seed salad. CJ making – he made the turkey – with Tom's stuffing and, like, 3 pounds of butter, they said. Insane.
Yeah, that – I mean, we put 2 sticks of butter in our turkey. So what's that?
That's a cup of butter, 2 sticks.
And they put 3 pounds?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's a lot of butter. Okay. I bet it was so good.
Let's pause on CJ for a second because – I didn't notice that there was, like, a foil on Emerald's team to what CJ was doing, which was, like, effectively being, like
– Yeah, who was it on Emerald's
sort of executive team? Chef. But I don't know that anybody was, like, asked to do that. So I actually saw that and I was like, why is he doing that? Maybe because he's making the turkey, I guess. I don't know. He also did the foie gras pancetta pork belly stuffing. Anyways, okay, sorry. I digress. We chatted about Eliza's dessert. We chatted about Lizzie on the mashed potatoes. Micah did the roasted Brussels sprouts with shallots. Stefan did a panna cotta with orange cardamom. And then Josh did a sweet potato ravioli with pecans.
I mean, I would pretty much eat 100% of this meal. It all sounds very good to me. The sweet potato ravioli, I feel like it's the type of thing I'd want one bite of and, like, I wouldn't actually keep eating it. But it's, like, as a novelty, sounds delicious. I'm trying to think of, yeah, so the mashed potatoes were a real red herring, but they were clearly excellent. Like, yeah, she knows what she's doing. 50% butter, 50% potato.
That's so nuts, yeah.
That's, I mean, delicious, but disgusting.
Disgusting.
Like, yeah, one bite of that and you're eating like a tablespoon of butter.
Yeah, they're just slopping and flopping all over your plate.
But she knew what she was doing. And you gotta love it when they're just like, I'm telling you, I've got this.
The on the whole, this team was the stronger team.
Yeah.
There was a few clunkers. The things that like didn't work well, Josh, the pasta was a little too thick and the dough was a little too tough. Mm-hmm. The cardamom was a little strong and Stefan's panna cotta, which, yeah, I feel like if you go anywhere past appropriate, it's going to be too strong with that.
I agree.
The Brussels sprout, Michael's Brussels sprouts were not seasoned. They were a little greasy. And
then
there was
bacon in those.
I don't think so. No,
I don't think so either.
If we, I don't know if we're counting pancetta as bacon. I guess we shouldn't, but it's its own thing. It's different. And then Eliza's was too much chocolate, which made me laugh. I was like, that's like kind of don't blame the tool, you know?
Well, to me, it's like I love chocolate and I think like most people love chocolate. And to say something has too much chocolate is universally like, oh, you must have really fucked up if that's.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to be like, that's too much chocolate.
Yeah.
It's got to be really bad.
It probably was. And it sounded bad. Like even if you got it right, it sounded bad. So.
Yeah. I didn't like it.
She was working
okay,
uphill.
Let's focus on the great team, Emerald's team. So New Orleans Creole menu.
Well, one thing that we didn't talk about on the red team was the drama between Stefan and Carla.
Yes. Thank you. I can't believe
because this was some capital. This was like early 2010s drama.
This was TV. This was
what
not
did you?
Cooking.
Yeah. What did your like 2024 like brain take away from that interaction?
So the 2024 brain, I was like, I mean, and even at the time, like Stefan's a pig. He really is. And I thought Carla, maybe more so in her talking head than in the kitchen, did a really good job of like explaining why it was offensive to her and not just like, I think that this has become such a common criticism, like don't call me sweetie, don't call me honey, that it's almost like a meme and it's almost stupid. But
yeah.
I think at the time it was pretty rare for someone to articulate so well, like, I work just as hard as you. I fight. I raised my sisters, like all these things. I'm not your sweetie. I'm your peer.
And it's like when it's men, it's chef. When it's like a girl, it's sweetie or honey. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Stefan is definitely a pig. And I think that he probably represents all that like Tom Colicchio does not like in the kitchen from getting back to something we talked about last episode, like the countenance of a top chef, Stefan just doesn't possess. Yeah. And I think his ego, like so many, he says all the time in his talking heads, like so many people came up to me and told me I should have won my season. It's like just in saying that alone, you are proving that you don't deserve to be top chef.
Yeah.
Because you don't understand what it's about.
Yeah. It's also funny, like if you really want to play that out, like should we assume that every person that didn't come up to you like didn't think you should win? Like, I don't know. That's not telling me a lot. Like no one's going to come up to you and be like, yeah, you didn't win and I'm glad you didn't.
Yes. Also, the other thing is, like, he picked the worst person to do it with because Carla's, like, a tough fucking cookie.
Yeah.
Like, he – even Stefan says – he's like, I'm pretty sure her ex-husband's in the mafia. And, like, that's not – that's – he clearly said it in, like, a racist way, but he's also probably not wrong. Like, Rao's famously was, like, a place for organized crime figures to eat. So that
the comment about, like, also, like, this is why I left Europe, like, European women –
But
he was actually – I think he was, like, actually genuinely scared of her, like, intimidated.
Well, the other thing I have in my notes, because you're asking, like, from the 2024 perspective versus – or, sorry, 2025, because you're probably – you're listening to this in the year 2025, dear listener. But today is the last day of 2024 that we are recording this. Stefan – and I have in my notes that Stefan and Carla are kind of, like, each other's cosmic – equal. Like they are both so loud and rude. And like Carla is right, but she's also rude and annoying.
Yes.
And I think like Stefan is loud, rude, and annoying. And
it is like King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah. It's just the two of them being like at each other.
So yeah, to your point, drama. Like the Emerald Kitchen as a result seemed to be the much more chill
vibing out
space to be. Even though the food was very beige. Just like, yeah, you know, I don't know. Yeah. It's tough because this is, you know what? No, I will save that thought. I will not critique that point on New Orleanian food. But I think that like those, the spices in Creole food are so, when you taste it, you're like, oh, this is Creole food. And I think that there was that in every single dish, which I get was the prompt, but it felt like, where do I get a breath?
Yeah. Yeah, like this felt like a heavy meal. And everything in the Italian team's meal was heavy. Like it was pasta.
Yeah, it actually was also heavy. Stuff. That's true.
But it didn't feel quite as monochromatic.
Yeah.
Let's start with, I mean, the clunker of clunkers, Josie. Josie has immunity from the quick fire. So she, I think, graciously said, I'll do the turkey, which is the right thing to do if you have immunity. But she did not cook the turkey. It was raw. That is not a meat that can be served medium.
I'm like confused by that. And honestly, I think the easiest thing to cook is the turkey.
It is. I don't know that I'd go so far as to say it's the easiest thing to cook because it is – I think it's the easiest thing to go wrong is the turkey.
Maybe. I just – I don't know. Like if you cook a turkey like
– it takes a lot of attention.
It doesn't really. Like you're actually not supposed to open – like all – they like bringing out the turkey and like basting it. Now the like verdict is like, no, actually you don't want to open the oven because like – the heat drops too much and then the turkey temperature doesn't regulate. But like the only thing you have to know is like the weight of the turkey, stuff it, butter it, whatever, leave it in the appropriate amount of time and then just leave it in there.
Yeah.
And like check it with a meat thermometer. I guess I don't mean to be like, meh, 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 but it's sort of like, I think it's, I actually maybe disagree when I would say it's like the, it would be pretty hard to mess up as badly as Josie messed it up.
Yes, the way that she messed it up was surprising because the way that you traditionally mess up a turkey is overcooking it and it's dry.
Right.
She like did the thing that very few people do, which is undercook a turkey.
It was gross looking. It did like, not it was look scary. Good.
Yes.
And she was very like, hey, I got this, like real like smug as a bug.
Yes. Okay, but let's move on from her. So we have Brooke making sweet potato buttermilk biscuits. Brooke is something of a biscuit queen on Top Chef. Every time she makes biscuits, they're very good.
Would we consider this like – oh, no, dessert is not like –
yeah, I was going to say dessert. Yeah. I don't know that dessert's her secret weapon yet, but like biscuits are definitely Brooke's secret weapon.
Yeah.
Like she can do them in her sleep. And there's actually a really funny episode in season 14 when Brooke comes back as an all-star – where and so does Sheldon, where they're making biscuits and like Sheldon is just copying everything Brooke does and his don't turn out and Brooke's do. And like she clearly knows what she's doing.
Well, this is another dish that is in the kind of same camp as Lizzie's where like you hear Emeril saying when they're at the table, oh, this was Brooke's idea. And I think I don't know that the biscuit, the idea of biscuits or just the sweet potato buttermilk aspect of them, but there was some space for people to maybe make suggestions. But then again, like if we continue down to the next person here, like Daniela, Emeril's mom's dressing. So that's bread stuffing with chorizo and cayenne. So that very much in name alone leads me to believe there was like not a lot of room to innovate. Luckily it turned out well for Danielle and they really liked it. On the flip side of this, like to the point I was making earlier, like there's just no breath in this meal. It's all like super heavy. Mm-hmm. Sheldon, who had the greens, ends up not cooking them enough. And I actually kind of respect his logic. He was like, you know, everything's really heavy. Like I just figured like this could be at a different texture. So I actually thought that was like a reasonable
Yeah, the approach. Other thing with greens that's interesting is, like, he didn't – I wouldn't go so far as to say he undercooked them because they were cooked. But I think what they were getting at is, like, you know, collard greens, like the style of New Orleans greens is so that they're like falling apart, which is when they're like super cooked.
Right, right.
And he like, I don't think anyone was critiquing him saying that like it was raw kale, but yeah, they were like, it wasn't really falling apart enough. And I think that's kind of a preference thing. And that's probably where like him being from Hawaii, he was like, we don't do that to greens.
Yeah.
Like that's actually an affront to the green. poor green. So I agree. Like, I think that he was given the right amount of like grace on that.
Yeah.
Because they were good and they were cooked. They just weren't cooked to the style of New Orleans, like completely cooked through greens.
Yeah.
And then, okay. So we have Tyler making gumbo. So we talked about this a little bit, but gumbo is a deceivingly difficult dish.
Right.
Dish. Like it is, of course, you know, it comes from just throw everything in a pot, let it cook. But it has turned into an art form in New Orleans. Everyone knows this. Like you don't have to live there to know that. And he took it on. And it's really interesting because when Emeril came to check, the gumbo was perfect. And then 2 hours later, it was very much not good.
Yeah. And I think it was just largely because he didn't maintain like the core ratios of it.
Yeah.
So he like didn't adjust the Worcestershire. He didn't add more hot sauce. So yeah, that kind of sucked. Kimiko helped him with the rice, which if we kind of like walk in then to Kimiko's performance, she sort of like fell into the trap. She had potato pavé, but she fell into the trap of like, I'm going to help everybody else and then like not do my shit. And so we ended up with raw undercooked potatoes for her.
That was tough to watch. It sucked because we really like her. But what I will say is like, if in the quick fire you struggled with time, like I do think it was irresponsible of her to be like everyone else's backup.
Yeah.
To put herself in that position. Cause I do think she volunteered it. Or yeah. I honestly think John kind of like put her in that position. He's like, Kuniko's helping me. Cause like they had worked together previously in the previous challenge and won. So I'm sure she like sort of felt comfortable in that role. But she kept audibly saying, like, I don't know if I have enough time. I think I will. And like I kind of feel like she could have known to protect herself a little more.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe
it
that
was
just
only
like,
one situation.
Yeah, being like an executive chef, like instinct to just like make sure everything is ship shape.
Yep. Okay, so then on the so John Tizar makes cornbread dressing and a spiced pumpkin and goat cheese torte. That doesn't sound good to me because of the goat cheese. We all know, not my.
Yeah, and this was also something that was like his idea. So the torte was his idea. Guess that it was a bit grainy. The cornbread he nailed though, so that's good. This like could have been one of those disasters where they do two and it was like, oh, you should have just done one. He probably should have just done one because the cornbread was the good part. But Chrissy, who we haven't really talked about much, mostly because she hasn't gotten a ton of screen time or just like I haven't heard her speak really. she did white chocolate and pecan bread pudding with whiskey sauce. They really loved that. Mm-hmm. So she was just vibing. And then lastly, we had Kristen, who did an assiette of root vegetables. So she had parsnip, truffle puree, creme fraiche. The root vegetables seemed a bit under-seasoned and they didn't really think the creme fraiche was necessary. Even so, so Emerald's team, it's a landslide victory for Tom's team.
I think that from an individual perspective, like the dishes that were good on Emerald's team were of the best dishes of the night, but there were more unsuccessful dishes than successful dishes, and therefore they lost. Like I do think that it sounds like Brooke's biscuit was a standout among everyone's dishes.
Yeah, agree.
And then I think the Emerald's mom's dressing that Danielle made also I think was a cut above. But unfortunately they were on the losing team. As Bit said, it was sort of a runaway success for Tom's team. And so on the top for that team, we have CJ, Lizzie, and Carla, with Carla winning the challenge.
That.
She was great when she won.
That was awesome. That was a very joyous win. No, that's great. I was really happy about all the people that got to the praise this episode.
Yeah. It was the right people.
And then conversely on the bottom, we had Tyler, Sheldon, Kuniko, and they made a point to bring Josie out too.
Yep.
And no, just said,
no,
like,
no better way to scare you straight than bringing you into the bottom with immunity.
Yeah. Whoa. I love that they did that. I appreciate that
Tom did that.
Yeah.
And Tom always says that. I'm trying to remember what season it is. It's not this season, but I have to go back. But like, there is one season where the person with immunity, like, above everyone deserves to go home. I think it, in addition to like cooking a bad dish, I think like also acted inappropriately or something. And there's this huge debate of like, can we send this person home? And Tom is like, no, we like the rules have to be consistent. But I do appreciate that Tom still will like give his opinion. Like, you're not safe if you have immunity. You're not safe from critique. You're safe from elimination.
Respect. So then we have to say goodbye to Kuniko. Her potatoes were raw and bad.
It really sucks.
Yeah. Would you eat that though?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't eat it either. I do love potato pavé though.
I know, but as we have decided, would you eat that is about how it's prepared on the show, and I would not have enjoyed it as is.
It's like in the world of golf, you must hit it as the ball lays or as it rests.
You know, I've never played golf once in my
life. I only know that from Happy Gilmore.
Got it.
That's like a major plot point. He has to like hit the ball from where it lays, and one of the times it like gets it like lands on a guy's foot.
Good to know. Well, little a bit of an asterisk trivia at the end of this episode is in the stew room where they're stewing, not a place for literal stew cooking. There like sort of breaks out a drama, capital D, argument.
Oh yeah,
between John Tesar, Josh, and CJ. John makes a pretty disparaging remark about Kuniko, who just one episode prior, he was like, Kuniko's amazing. And he makes a pretty rude off-the-cuff remark about her losing and being the reason why she went home. And in a way where it's like, that might be true, but just like not the time. Like,
yeah, which I think is what CJ says.
Exactly. Like, you don't have to rub salt in the wound. Anyway, I want to put an asterisk on that because it leads into the next episode, so I want to talk about that next episode. But it's
storm clouds are gathering,
like, further proving that like season 10 was still very much a TV / cooking competition, not a televised cooking competition.
You gotta wonder what he's thinking. Like,
he's a lot to handle, man.
He is a lot. When he puts his glasses like this,
I don't like them
on the top of your head.
Just his vibe in general. He's a narc.
That means your glasses are too tight. If you're able to do that and they stay there,
means they're too tight.
They're too tight. I don't know. That's bits facts.
Okay. Well, why don't we close this out with a judgy table?
Judge. Should I? Where are they now for Kuniko?
Oh, please. Yes.
Kuniko. Sorry.
Please.
Okay. So we'll be excited to know. So we already covered this on our leftover last week, but yes. At the time of competing, she was an executive chef at Komsa. So kind of, this is a bit of a like prequel into her Top Chef time. And I kind of pulled this from her current, operations website, but she actually started out as a banker. She started in banking, not Michael Scott, like a bank teller. So she had a brief stint there and then she sort of was like, nope. She left Japan. She went to LA. She was working as a server at a noodle house, a Japanese noodle house. And then, she got into a really passionate conversation with Chef David Myers of Sona. Wow. And so he suggested to her like, hey, you should try to like chase this culinary zeal into the kitchen. So she did just that. She ended up working at the storied Sona kitchen for a few years. She went from the Amuse station to the chef de cuisine, and then she later served as executive chef of his brasserie Komsa, as we mentioned, in West Hollywood. She appeared on Top Chef after that. So this was all before Top Chef, which is crazy.
She's pretty accomplished.
Yeah. So she was raised, she was named Rising Star, 2010 chef, got a lot of critical accolades. She currently, or so most recently, opened up in a mixed-use downtown LA complex, P. Kuniko. I may be mispronouncing that. but basically, it's a lot of Japanese-style fried chicken, comprise a lot of like early childhood memories, flavors. And she serves in a sandwich or a basket, a lot of salads, sides, desserts. So it's a combination of picnic and Kuniko. So it's sort of like picnics, you know, casual bites. So yeah, so she's chilling. She's having a blast.
So happy for her.
Me too. Me too. I think this is to me like, and I remember when we chatted with Jen of season six, there's just some people that it doesn't mean like that you're, and this is what the drama got into this episode was like, you're not a bad chef because you like can't do Top Chef. Like it's just a different sport entirely. And, and Brooke brings up a similar point in our conversation with her, that we had with her. It's just a different, like, it's like a different stomach. That's why I can have dessert and, you know, whatever after. It's just different. But let's back up. Let's do some judgy table for this ep. Mm-hmm.
I will let you go first because I went first last time.
Okay.
So I'm ready to rock. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Begin.
Not taking the fall, even though you have immunity. Josie, I know we touched on this, but, like, if your chick – if your turkey is raw on the Thanksgiving challenge and you have immunity, please recuse yourself. Like, just go. That's not that, like, be the bigger person. Yes, like, technically you don't have to go home, but everybody's looking at you like, wow, I cannot believe that this person just served raw turkey and, like, has the audacity to stay here. At least that I would be. And we've seen it before, like, people who go, I forget who it was that, like, volunteered. That's a good leftover. But I don't know. I wish that there was like maybe a little bit more guilt on her part. And I think that we should maybe be cool with the culture of like, I'm going to bow out if you do really badly.
Okay. I actually have some thoughts on your judgy table.
Lay it out.
I remember what you're talking about. There's someone who was like, send me home. I think it was Kevin Gillespie on his All-Star season.
You're right.
He like really fell on his sword. And which is very honorable, but that person, and I think it's happened like a few other times where someone's like, send me home. And that person always gets sent home because Tom is like, if you're willing to give this up for someone else, then you don't want to be here.
Mm.
And I think that that's a bit like intense. I think that people who are doing it think that they're doing something honorable, which they are. Kevin Gillespie is an incredible man. But the response to that is always like, okay, you're getting eliminated, but they will never eliminate someone with immunity.
Yeah, it has to be like their choice.
But the other thing I will say, the reason why I actually disagree with your judgy table is because Josie, very like a rare occurrence, like defended Kuniko at judgy table, or judges table, excuse me. She said like, well, the reason why she didn't have enough time because she was helping other people. And then the judges say, you know, like you're not judged on your behavior in the kitchen. You're judged on your dish.
Yeah.
But I think if Josie didn't have immunity, she would not have done that. And so I do think
that's true.
She like used her immunity
for something
in a really clever way for something that was like, yeah, she fucked up. Undercooking a Thanksgiving turkey on a Thanksgiving challenge is like, to me, grounds for dismissal. But I do think that like she stretched the bounds of what immunity can give you by like really speaking up at judges' table.
Yeah.
In a way that takes a lot of chutzpah, but you can kind of only do if you know you can't be sent home.
That's a great point. I think that's totally fair. And like I'm honestly having a bit of a flashback to us talking about this previously, like this exact conversation. And I very well may have come down on the other side of the issue at that time.
It's subjective.
It's subjective, but like I think that there was something that just like really like worked me up about like, dude, that was – you did a horrible job on that turkey.
Yeah. I mean they literally said you sank your team.
Yeah.
I wonder if the turkey had been well cooked, if their critique of the other dishes in the team would be as strong.
That's always a question for me. Like and especially for commonly like restaurant wars is like the closest that we get to this where it's like, okay, we have to make a menu together. But yeah, it's sort of just like the overall quality of the meal like either levels up or tamps down. Anyways, okay.
Good okay, discussion. My judgy table. Good discussion. Begins now. I don't get why people don't like Thanksgiving. Like Thanksgiving is absolutely my favorite holiday. And when I tell people that, they're like, really? I don't really like Thanksgiving that much. Like people are, they just completely underestimate the beauty of Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is an incredible holiday for a lot of reasons. One, I fucking love the meal. And anyone who's like, the Thanksgiving meal is like too heavy and not that good or whatever. Like, you have it once a year. It's a joy. The other thing is that Thanksgiving, while obviously comes from like very bad beginnings and like Puritans were crazy and like super religious and all this stuff, it is a secular holiday. And it is like a, it is something that everyone can genuinely enjoy and celebrate. Like Memorial Day, Labor Day, July 4th, those are like one day like parties. Thanksgiving is a, like a real celebratory occasion that is purely secular, which is kind of rare in the United States these days. And I just think it's something that everyone can participate in, and I love it. And we should stop shitting on Thanksgiving as a not good holiday.
Mm.
These are my thoughts.
I vibe with it. I think one thing that I'll say is like, I think for a lot of people, they just don't come up from a family of people that cook well. Like if you go to a Thanksgiving with bad food, you're kind of like, okay, I get. Like if people are like just meeting the baseline criteria of a Thanksgiving dinner, I could see why it would be extremely lackluster.
Fair.
But I think that's just because you've been blessed with like great home cooks.
Thanksgiving, like,
yeah,
it's so, I wouldn't even say wholesome because like that's stupid and I don't necessarily care about that. But I just think it's such a beautiful way to celebrate with your family, to give thanks for things.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think people – I think I can understand why people – why – and that's holidays generally. Like people have a mixed feeling relationship with the holidays. Of course. Like don't hate Thanksgiving just for the principle of hating it. Like
– or for not liking turkey.
Yeah.
Like grow up.
Grow up. It is kind of crazy that we like don't eat turkey ever besides Thanksgiving.
It's a tough meat. It's not the best meat. But I love it on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best holiday.
It's definitely the thing I like the least about Thanksgiving, though.
Sure. Okay. Anyway, this has been a fabulous episode. We have episode 4 that is also being released today because we released 2 episodes a day.
So you're just bad.
Go straight into that one. But we'll see you on the next episode of Compliments to the Chef.
Bye.
Bye.